You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. Each week, I will bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. And I will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so many other things. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals and authors in many of the helping fields who are working to keep this world a better place for all of us. And I'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Our guest today, Glennon Doyle Melton, is the founder of Momastery.com. That's Momastery.com, and a regular contributor to the Huffington Post. Now, for years, Glennon built a wall between herself and others, hiding inside a bunker of secrets and shame. But 10 years ago, addicted, unwed, Glennon discovered she was pregnant, shocked, and terrified, she did the only thing she knew to do. She collapsed on the bathroom floor and prayed. Now, when she stood up, she decided to become a mother. She married the father of her child, a man with whom she had only spent 10 sober nights with, and vowed never to have another drink, cigarette, or drug again. In the decades since, Glennon has learned what it takes to be a loving mother, wife, sister, friend, and author. Her new book, which debuted at number 3 on the New York Times bestseller list, Carry On Warrior, Thoughts on Life Unarmed, was just released last month, and true to her book, I'm told, she wakes up every morning ready to do battle. Glennon, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you. What a beautiful introduction. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you, and I have been enjoying reading your book, and I got to tell you that I read at the gym a lot in the mornings, and I have had more women come up to me and because they can see, you know, that I'm reading something, and sometimes when it's sitting on there, you know, the way that I put it, they can see it, and I've had more women come up to me and go, "Where'd you get that book?"
So, oh, really?
In fact, and I had one that came up, and apparently she is very familiar with your website, because she came up and said, "Oh, that book is out. I've been waiting for that book." She said, "I've gone on her website, and and apparently has communicated with you on your blog." So anyway, I thought that was great. That as I'm sitting there, you know, reading the book and kind of getting ready for the show, that there's already women out there that are familiar with your work and really seemed excited that that you have the book coming out. So congratulations for that.
Thank you. That makes me so happy. So happy. Thank you very much.
So now, because I've been now reading it, and I, you know, I'm really getting enthralled in your journey. And one of the things that I noticed, I mean, right off the bat, when I first started reading it, I thought it was very interesting the way in which you opened the book. So just to kind of share with everybody, and I have a question that goes with it. Now, when you open the book, you seem baffled. And you know, a woman says to you at church, you know, "You're so pulled together. You know, it makes me feel so apart." Why did you choose to begin the book with that particular scene?
Yeah, you know, I guess it's because it's been a running thread through my whole life. I became a bulimic when I was 8 years old. So really, for as long as I can remember, I've been lost to addiction. Bulimia morphed into alcoholism in college, and I added drug use, and I've been lost to addiction for most of my life, but because I've always been able to maintain outward appearances, no one's ever known. And I have sort of lived in this strange world. For example, my senior year in high school, I was so sick with bulimia that I actually was sent to a mental hospital for several weeks to try to get myself together. But when I returned to high school 2 weeks later, I was voted leading leader out of a class of 1,000 kids. So I've always had this strange, this tension between the way I guess I presented myself outwardly and what I was really going through inwardly. And I just really, I think I said in the opening, I just became desperate at some point for my insides to match my outsides. I wanted to start telling what it was like to be me on the inside to other people. And so that's where I opened the story.
Well, and I think that's why this has taken hold so much. I mean, so many people on the internet, so many people. I think it's because you touch something that we can all relate to, you know, and I think that's what it is. I think for so many of us, you know, there is this thing of, you know, we're conditioned to present ourselves a certain way, you know, and so, you know, that whole thing. And I can remember, you know, from, you know, an early age, you know, parents, you know, and teachers saying, you know, make sure you always put your best foot forward.
I tried that for so long. And, you know, I think it's so interesting when you try it the other way. I worked so hard for so long to be perfect, to be seen as perfect. And, oh my gosh, I did so much damage. I mean, my bulimia to my body, my liver, oh my goodness, so much damage just hiding all of my imperfections. But it's so funny because when I came out and started talking about them, I got what I really always have wanted, which is just acceptance for who I am and real friends who know me for me and still love me. So it's kind of like what I was working so hard for so long, I finally got by doing the opposite of what I'd always been doing.
Now, in the book, you mention playing hide and seek. I mean, share a little bit about the first time in which you kind of got that feeling of, wow, you know what? If I do something different, it feels different. And maybe some of the parents that are out there and that see this going on with their own children will recognize it and maybe start helping their child at an earlier age to go ahead and come out of the shell.
Gosh, I mean, that's what I'm struggling with every day. Now I'm a parent, and my kids are 7, 10, and 5, so they are right around the age I was when I became bulimic, which is so scary to me. I don't know exactly how we get our kids to come out of those shells, except that I do know that one thing I tell my kids every single day is that I don't need them to be the best at anything. All I need them to do is be kind and brave. And kind and brave is a sort of a mantra for us, and we say it before we go to soccer and before we go to school. They know that we expect them to make huge mistakes, and we don't care if they're cool or pretty or perfect. But we just want them to be kind and brave and engage in the world that way. And that's what I remind myself before I go on stage and speak or before I write an essay, just be kind and brave. Simplifying things that way and not trying to be anything you're not helps me, and I think it does help the kids too. But the first time I, as an adult, the first time I was sitting on a playground with another mom, and our kids were young, and I was feeling pretty isolated at home. But I was with this other mom, and I knew she was a friend from church, and I knew that she was having some real struggles with her family. I knew her marriage was going through some trouble because of things I'd heard, but we weren't talking about that. We had this amazing opportunity. We were sitting on a park bench, but kids were busy playing. We could actually talk, but we weren't talking about anything important. We were talking about soccer practice and, you know, where we got our highlights and all of these things that didn't matter at all. And it actually started to make me crazy because I felt like, what's the point of even having a friend if you can't talk about the stuff you really need to talk about? So I decided to try something new. I sat her down on the park bench again, and I said, look, I'm just going to tell you some of my story. And I told her at the time I was going through some postpartum depression. I told her all about that. I told her about my history with addiction. I told her about some of the struggles in my marriage. I told her my whole story. And she just looked at me in complete shock. And I was terrified for a minute. But then her face kind of fell, and she sort of unlocked. And she just opened up, and she told me her whole story. And we became really, really close friends. And I got to kind of accompany her alongside her journey of healing her family. We're still very close friends today. And it was just my first experience of, wait a minute, if I share the real me with someone, there's a real potential for deep connection and sort of an unlocking of someone else. It seemed like a miracle to me. And so that's what I started doing my writing.
Well, and it sounds like, I mean, the two thoughts came to mind. One is that I think that, you know, we have this fear of being judged, and you know, because that we have such a visual society now, and everything's on TV and things, and that you know, people are judging everything. I mean, we're watching TV and we're judging, you know, who's dancing better or who's doing this or who's doing that, and so you have this constant judging. I think that maybe a lot of this may come from the fact that we just all are kind of afraid of being judged.
Absolutely. We are so afraid of being judged that we will pretend for a lifetime.
Uh-huh.
Which I think is sort of crazy, right? It's like being judged and being criticized is horrible. I mean, I'm facing it now every day, the bigger the book becomes and the bigger the website becomes.
Uh-huh.
But you know what? The worst criticism that I get is better than living the lie I was living before. And I would rather be hated for who I really am than loved for who I'm really not. That's how I felt before. Like, I may have, you know, been accepted, but I was being accepted for some fake version of myself.
Right.
So now at least it's real, and I'll take it.
Right. And I think where you're touching on is authenticity. I mean, you know, let's get some authenticity out there, you know, where we are being who we are, being authentic, and I love that. You know, you want people to love you or like you for who it is that you are. When you were talking about having the conversation on the bench, and I thought of, we have, you know, people, I mean, you know, hundreds of thousands of us, maybe millions of us, you know, pay thousands and thousands of dollars for a psychologist, for a therapist, for a psychiatrist, whatever, to sit for an hour a week and to listen to us tell who we are for real, you know, authentically who we are. And I think it's just so beautiful that if we can have friends that we can be close enough to, that we can share those things, and vice versa, it'd be a whole lot less of us in therapy.
That's right. And I think it speaks to the fact that we all need a little more time. We need to take a little more time to really listen to each other. Because I feel like we not only need the time to speak more, but we also need the time to listen more. Because I spend half my day writing and half my day reading letters from women all over the world every single day. And both the reading and the writing are parts of my healing, equal parts. Because the more letters that I read when other women are telling me their stories, the more I learn that my experiences are not my own. They're universal. I think a lot of us, we would need less therapy if we could accept and understand that life is not hard because we're doing it wrong. It's just hard because it's supposed to be. It's hard for everybody. And so that's easier for me to accept the challenges that come into my life because I've listened. I've spent years listening to other women's stories, and I know that everybody has pain.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's a crucial and important part of life.
Yep. Now, and when you mentioned that about the fact that it is part of your therapy, I was in a meeting last night, and the conversation was, why is reality television so popular, and why is it going to remain popular? And one of the things that I brought up is that there are so many people out there now that want to see a train wreck, you know, and they want to be able to turn to somebody else and say, well, at least my life isn't that bad.
Oh, completely. I mean, I have to tell you, I have to raise my hand and say I am completely guilty of that. I mean, I watch Super Nanny just so I can feel better about my parenting. I watch Hoarders just so I can feel better about my disorganized house. So, yes, I completely get that. And I also think that reality TV is sort of a way of numbing ourselves. I mean, that's what I use it for. I think after a long day of, you know, where my heart was really engaged and my head is really engaged, I just numb out on the couch with something that doesn't require a lot of brain power. But I mean, I do think that, you know, it's probably doing a number on our kids, because our kids think that the real world is like it is on reality TV, and it's not.
It's not. And that same point you bring up about numbing is that we don't want to numb them to everything that is going on, as if it's all acceptable and it's all really happening, because you tend to take them to a doom and gloom type of mentality, and we don't want to do that.
That's exactly right. And that's one of the reasons why I write Momastery. I mean, it is a place where, you know, the beauty of life, there are as many wonderful helpers out there as there are bad guys. We just glorify the bad guys like nobody's business in this country. But there are a million wonderful things going on every day, for sure.
Now, and speaking of Momastery, and I want to share with our listeners out there, you can go to this site right now. You can open up another window. You can see what we're talking about, and just go to momastery.com. You can go there. You'll see there's a picture of the book there, but you can also see that, you know, this is a community, you know, where you can go. In fact, I was going through it, and maybe you can share with me a little bit about, and I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing it right, but, you know, you have these groups of people that are called now Monkeys.
I named the blog Momastery because I started it at a time when I was stuck in my house with three small kids and I was feeling very isolated. And I've always been completely fascinated by all different faith traditions, and so I study monasteries. And at the time, I was really desperate for a quiet place, like a monastery, where I could kind of go and be with other thinkers and be with other people who were interested in, you know, building a peaceful community. So that's how we got Momastery. A lot of us are moms. Now we're all different kinds of people, but at the time, most of us were moms. And after a while, they wanted to name themselves something, but they didn't think they could use monks because we're much too irreverent for that. So they changed their name to Monkeys. So that's how we came up with that. But these people, I mean, when you were talking about, you know, the good things that are going on, these people at this website, it's such a community that last month, in 5 hours, this community raised $83,000 with a limit of $25. Nobody was allowed to donate more than $25 in order to help a teen mom in Indiana get a home for 2 years. They didn't know her. They just, in 5 hours, raised $83,000 to get her a home in a nonprofit teen home for 2 years. And they do stuff like this all the time. And it's just the concept of, you know, when you can come to a place and tell your story and be heard, it's so empowering, and it's so it's such a relief to be able to just be yourself in a place without being judged. And I think it's really kind of empowered these people to make a difference for other people that they don't even know. So it's been a miracle. It's been amazing.
Yeah. And that truly is a miracle, because, you know, you're saying that, you know, not only could this person go somewhere and talk about their story, which I'm sure that they're not proud of, you know, that they find themselves in that position, but I mean, how beautiful is that, that, you know, that not only are you not judged, but that people get together and go, oh, well, you need this. They get together, yeah. And all of a sudden she is now able to have a place for her children. That's just incredible.
And she's back in school. She wants to be a doctor. She's kind of leading the group of girls that are at that house. I got to go up, fly out and visit her in Indiana a couple weeks ago and do some fundraising for their home. And I got to meet all of them. And it's really something. It's really something.
Well, and again, for those that want to go on the site, Glennon tells her own story on there, but obviously with the blog, you know, there are other people's stories as well. And actually, speaking of that, you know, share a little bit more about, you know, kind of your story and you know, not only what you went through, but, you know, when you got to that point and you made that decision and said, you know what, I am now going to make sure that, you know, that I relieve myself of this burden, that I'm going to talk about it, I'm going to live it. And, you know, one of the things in the book is, you know, when you said, and I'm going to dance, you know.
So share
that part, because I'm sure that there are people out there that are, you know, feeling a little overwhelmed.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Life is so overwhelming. Well, you know, I gave a speech this weekend, and I was trying to think of what is the difference? What is the difference between my life now as a sober, creative, capable mother and wife and friend compared to what my life was like the first 25 years, where I was a train wreck. I was an addict and very, very lost. And, you know, I think that what it comes down to for me is that I've really always been very afraid of my feelings. I have sort of felt things very intensely, which led me to hide. And that's what addiction is. It's a hiding place. And, you know, I truly believe that we all have our hiding places. I think that addiction is certainly, you know, one that's out there and people can see and feel and hear. But, I mean, I think perfectionism is a hiding place. I think snarkiness and judging, all those things you were just talking about, those are hiding places. They're places we go, we can put a front on, and we don't actually have to be seen or hurt. So, anyway, mine was addiction. And, you know, I came out of it. I found out I was pregnant on Mother's Day 11 years ago. I just had my anniversary 2 weeks ago, 11 years sober. And, you know, I always wish I had a better story, but I really just ran out of options. And the more people that I talk to who've gotten sober, sometimes that's what happens. You just run out of options. And I found myself on the bathroom floor on Mother's Day, and I'd lost my family, lost a lot of friends, because, you know, when you're an addict, you can't maintain relationships. I mean, I couldn't even answer the first question everyone asks, which is, how are you? I literally did not know how to answer that question. So I just decided, I remember I really only had two things that I told myself, which is just show up and just do the next right thing. Because I had no idea how to be a sober person. Forget about being a mother. So I just kept doing whatever appeared to me to be the next right thing, without worrying too much about the future. And what I'm seeing now, looking back, is that if you do the next right thing enough times, you kind of end up with a life. Sort of a crazy miracle. So, which probably sounds so simple to most people, but for an addict, that's not simple. It wasn't simple. I was so worried. I was so used to worrying about the outcome of everything. Try not to do that anymore. And you know what? I think, you know, there's this quote that says, I think it was, I can't remember who it was, but it said, the warrior is someone who sits with pain for 15 seconds. And that's what it is for me. I just try not to run and not to numb my feelings anymore. When I feel lonely or sad or angry, I just let myself feel lonely or sad or angry. And then I think what those feelings can turn into is fuel. You know, my loneliness is the reason that I am so desperate to connect with others that I write. And, you know, the pain that I feel is the reason that I'm so committed to helping other women out of their pain on the blog. These, you know, jealousy, I used to deal with jealousy so much. I was so jealous of writers. I couldn't even read people's books sometimes because I was so jealous of them. And I know now that jealousy can really be a guide towards what you were supposed to do with your life. You know, the people we're jealous of are always people who are doing what we know we could do. So now, instead of hiding from those feelings, I just kind of sit with them, and if they can be used, I use them as guides. And that's really the only difference between my previous life and this one.
Well, the book is Carry On Warrior, Thoughts on Life Unarmed. We're speaking with Glennon Doyle Melton. We're going to be right back. And when we are, I want you to tell us a little bit about the phrase that you've coined now called brutiful. So stay right with us.
founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And you're back with Answers for the Family. We are talking to Glennon Doyle Melton. And when we left, I mentioned a little bit about the term, Glennon, that you use, which is life is brutiful. So explain a little bit to everybody, you know, a little bit about how you came up with brutiful, and how can somebody, you know, how can somebody relate to this? You know, how can something be both beautiful and brutal at the same time?
Yes. So that word started out when I was trying to describe my parenting experience, actually. Because when I started writing, I felt like there were sort of these two camps of moms. You could either be in, you know, the perfect mom club where everything was bright and shiny and rosy all the time, or you could be in the, you know, slacker mom category where everything was kind of snarky and a joke and the kids were the worst and all of that. And I didn't feel like I belonged in either category because I felt like parenting was the most amazingly magical thing I'd ever done in my entire life. And I also felt like it was completely excruciatingly difficult. All the time, I felt like it was amazing and awful. And sometimes, all within the same minute, you know, especially with little ones, I could be sitting around the kitchen table feeling like the most amazing mom because everybody had some food on their plate. We were all happy and well-adjusted. And then somebody spills their milk. And it's like we've been ambushed by ourselves. Everything falls apart. And so it was this constant back and forth between wonderful and awful, wonderful and awful. And so one day I was writing about it, and I thought, you know, yes, life is beautiful. We hear that all the time. But life is also brutal. I mean, that cannot be ignored. There are people out there who don't want to hear people say over and over again that life is beautiful because their experience of life is excruciating. And I read enough stories to know that for sure, that what people go through here is, it's unbelievably hard. So, one day I just decided it is not either or. It's and both. It is brutal and beautiful all the time. Life, parenting, marriage, relationships, they're brutiful.
Well, I love it. And again, it goes right with sort of the theme of everything, which is authenticity. You're just being authentic. This is, I feel both, so I'm going to blend it together. Now, when you were talking a little bit about parenting, and one of the things that I thought was just hilarious in the book is share with our listeners your approach to housework.
Oh, gosh. My approach. I'm scared to share my approach. Well, I am just, I don't know what's wrong with me. I know it's not rocket science, but I can't cook. It used to just not taste good. So, you know, my family used to put up with it and try to be kind. But I actually made everybody sick a few months ago. I did something in the kitchen. I don't know if it was food poisoning. I don't know what I did. So it's actually become a safety issue in our house for my mom not to cook. So Craig, my husband, my sweet, long-suffering husband, has taken that over, which is good. And laundry, forget about it. I don't know how people get their laundry not to smell like dead mice, like mildew, but my whole family stinks all the time. I don't know. I guess I delete. Oh gosh, I just remembered. I think I have a load in the wash from last night. I think I just leave it overnight. I get distracted, and then it's all over. I don't know. My hats are off to all of the parents who can pull off this housekeeping thing well. But it's not a strength of mine. That's for sure.
Yeah, I liked how you came up with creative ways to convince Tish to help vacuum the carpet.
Yes.
And, you know.
We should tell your listeners about that, because that I would like to take credit for that idea. Okay, so if, you know, the little girls or some little boys, my little boy actually had one too, but you know those little baby strollers they walk the house around the house with?
Mm-hmm.
If you have your child walk back and forth in careful straight lines across your carpet, the little wheels on the doll strollers make little fancy vacuum lines. Looks exactly like somebody just vacuumed. So I used to, before people came over, I used to have Tish walk back and forth with her baby stroller. And it just looked like someone who really knew what they were doing lived at my house.
I think that's great. You know, I've got an email that came in that I want to share with you. I just felt it was so very touching. This email reads, what an amazing story. It says, I bought and read the book after reading Alan's press review. I had to stop several times because it is so wonderful. 5 years ago, we opened up our home to a young woman who was in desperate need, pregnant and addicted to prescription pain medications from an auto accident. We guided her by example to a holistic, healthy lifestyle, off the meds, and she truly turned her life around. Today, she is married, a successful store owner, and so very happy. She calls us frequently to thank us. I so encourage people to reach out to help others, and thank you for reaching out and helping others by telling your story.
Oh, I have goosebumps. That is so beautiful. I mean, for people to open up their homes, I mean, every time I hear a story like that, it blows my mind. Thank you. That is just a beautiful, beautiful story.
Well, but and again, from checking out the website and the blog and stuff, I mean, I think you get a lot of stories like this, and maybe they don't all open up their home, but I think that, you know, I mean, you get a lot of stories to where people get to feel empowered to tell their story. And I think you've empowered so many people. And again, without giving up any names or anything else, if you have a couple of stories that maybe are some of your favorites, I'd love for you to share them. If for anybody that's listened to the show for any length of time knows that I'm a real sucker for happy and success stories. So if you have a couple of favorites and you don't mind sharing, I would love it.
Oh, you have to you have to spend some more time at Mama's Dairy, then you are gonna love it. Gosh, I mean, the stories are endless. I don't know. I told you last week, or 2 weeks ago, I went to this teen home to speak to these young girls who have, you know, they've been through more than most of us can imagine. Each of their stories reads like, you know, 10 stories together, all the hurdles they've had to overcome. And, you know, I sat with one of them for a long time and told her my story, and she was so surprised that, you know, someone who looks relatively together could have been through what I've been through. And, you know, I just talked to her about how, you know, the most inspiring people are not the people who've never made a mistake. The most inspiring people are the people who've been through great challenge and great adversity and have kept showing up and haven't given up. And I just got an email this morning from the person who runs the Tina home and said that this girl is writing. She's always wanted to be a writer, and now she's writing. She just started a blog. She's telling her story. And she's, you know, kind of back to life where she feels like she has a story to tell. And, you know, I'm not doing anything except sit. I mean, there are heroes out there who are doing such hard work, like the people running this nonprofit. I'm writing my stories. It's a relatively easy thing to do, but for some reason, we are all desperate to be heard and to be validated. And I think that it's because, for some reason, we're all ashamed. We all think that we have these secrets in our lives that are so bad, and they're just unique to us. and they're keeping us from living a full and fully engaged life and from making real connections with other human beings. And it's just not true. There's nothing that we've done that a million people, other people haven't done too. And, you know, it's really brave, and it helps other people be brave to decide to live without shame. It's completely countercultural, and it freaks people out at first. But then people look and say, well, I see the reason for that. Why would you live with shame? Shame is sort of this fake thing we make up to keep us held back. And a life without it is beautiful.
Yes, but I think brave is something that we do associate with heroes, and brave, you know, to so many of these people that I know are writing in, you know, or like this person that's writing in, you know, they're feeling that, you know, like anything, to be that person that was kind of the first person to step out, you know, mm-hmm. You know, the first person to speak up, the first person to, you know, to say, if you go back, you know, go back into stories way back when, you know, the emperor's not wearing any clothes. You know, the first person that speaks up and says something, and then all of a sudden, everybody else goes, oh, yeah, you're right. Well, mm-hmm. I think it's the same type of thing. So I think it is very brave to go out there because, you know, we don't know how people are going to react and those fears that we do have of being judged. So mm-hmm. I think that's why so many people are just so thankful that you took that step. And it made it easier now for them to take that step and not feel as fearful, not feel afraid, you know, that they're going to be judged. So, I mean, I just think it's wonderful. And then to have now a place where they can go, you know, they can go to the blog, they can talk about it. They know that there's people that are going to be supportive of them. And I would imagine, I mean, the more that you go and the more that you open up, you know, the better you're going to feel as you take this load off of your shoulders. So, but anyway, yes, I think that it is very brave, and I'm just so thankful that you have done this and so many other people that have been the ones that have taken that step. I think it moves all of us to a better place.
Yeah. You know, I think it's like those, what we are afraid, we're so afraid of being judged and being criticized. And, you know, I've read recently that that's our biggest fear, like more than death. Mm-hmm. Being criticized and judged is a bigger fear for people than debt dying. And because we're so afraid of that, we build these little worlds. Like mine was addiction. Everyone has their own, overworking, whatever. But they're these little teeny, dark, but predictable worlds. And what I found is if you break out of those little worlds and decide to live together in the big, messy one, I don't know why it's better. It just is. It's better than being in our little, dark, controllable worlds. And, you know, the fact is, I can't tell people, yes, be brave, come on out, you won't get judged. You actually will. I get judged every single day and criticized every single day. And it hurts, but it doesn't hurt as bad as living a fake life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's all I can say. I certainly can't say come on out because it's nice and easy out here. It's not. But it's better.
Yeah, but I think as more people do this, it's going to be easier. It's mm-hmm. going to be more comfortable. I think people are going to be less apt to judge and more apt to say, "What can I help?"
I think so. Because you know, the people who do the judging, they're really afraid. I mean, people who are judging are the most insecure. And so I think what will really happen is if those people could start to feel okay in their own skin, that's where we'll see the magic happen. Because if we could all just remember that the people who are criticizing or the people who are judging, that's a reflection on them. It's not a reflection on us. That's really what we have to stay the course, you know. We have to stay in our own lane and know that whatever happens, whatever reactions happen on the outside, my dad always tells me, Glennon, what other people think of you is none of your business.
Yeah.
I really believe that's true.
No, and that's a great point. And I think for the, you know, the parents out there that are listening, you know, and if your kids are in school right now, you know, you can go to the website and you can gather some of this information, or you can also go to our website. You can listen to this show again with your kids. Let them hear that these points, you know, that Glennon is making right now. You know, let them hear that, you know, it's none of your business what they think. Or let them hear, and the great point you just brought up is that person that's judging you, that's their problem. They probably are hiding so many things that it's easier for them to try to put the focus somewhere else. And I think if the kids can start hearing that, you know, that's going to be something to where it's going to be a stepping stone for them. They're, you know, you know, it's great when that bully or somebody says something and you're able to look at it and go, that's really none of my business, and move on.
Right.
It's beautiful.
Right. Yeah, and there will always be bullies because there will always be hurt people. And bullies are hurt people. I was a teacher for a long time, and the kids who were bullies in my classroom were always the kids who were hurting the worst at home. And but you know what? If there's more of that middle ground, more of those kids who can kind of step in and be friends with each other, I mean, that's how the real world needs to work, too. It's not necessarily the bullies that are the problem, or like the you know, frontline people who are willing to go out there and tell their story. It's everybody in the middle. If those people would just be kinder and gentler and more accepting of each other, I think that would change everything. We don't have to get rid of all the bullies. We just have to make the people braver who are usually bystanders.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Now, another thing I wanted to make sure that I touched on, and unfortunately we are, I just looked up and we only have about 8 minutes. One of the things that I liked as I was reading the book is when you referred to the fact that confidence and humility are two sides of the same coin. Explain that to our listeners. I thought that was a very interesting point.
Oh gosh, I mean that concept, besides beautiful, is really kind of the lens through which I see everything, which is that I'm not sure that any of us grasp what a miracle each of us is. I think just the fact that we are human beings, that we are children of God, each of us, that we have divine origin, that we're walking miracles. You know, I think we all should be confident that we each have incredibly unique gifts to offer the world, and that, you know, we have more wisdom and strength than we even fathom. I think we all need a healthy dose of confidence based on those things. And the other side of that coin is that every single one of us is. You know, I think that when we don't grasp the knowledge of what a miracle each of us is, we can never become who we're supposed to be. Because we have to step into that. You have to know how powerful you can be to become that. Mm-hmm. But if we don't also appreciate that about each other, if we don't know that every person we encounter is a walking miracle and deserving of more respect than we could even muster, then we don't become who we're supposed to be. And I really think that who is more important than what. And, you know, I tell my kids every day, we don't take you to soccer so that you'll become an Olympic athlete. Like, that's not going to happen for us. We take you to soccer so you can practice being kind and being brave. We take you to gymnastics so that you can learn to be confident in your abilities, and also that you can learn to look and really experience other people, because other people are miracles. So, you know, we care a lot more about who we become than what we become, and I think they're exactly the same thing. I think that, you know, give me a person who is confident because she knows she's a child of God, and who is humble because she knows everybody else is too. I think that's the magic combo.
Yeah, and I just think that is so beautiful. Now, is there something in particular, is there a good way that we can remind ourselves to feel confident and humble every day, something we can get up and do every single morning and know that we are going to be more confident, more humble every single day when we wake up?
I truly believe that the only thing we have to do to remind ourselves of those things is find a few quiet minutes every day. I don't think that the answer is anywhere but in the quiet. My favorite verse is, be still and know. I know that every decision I've ever had to make has been made in those quiet moments, that we get the information and the knowledge we need when we're quiet enough to just slow down. take a few deep breaths and let it come to us. And I still find a million excuses not to do that. But when I do, it never fails me.
Well, and if you could share one thing, and again, I noticed that that at times you take a cue from the writer Anne Lamott, mm-hmm. that you have three prayers that you repeat most often. Share with us what those are.
Okay, so Anne Lamott, she's my favorite writer. Well, one of my probably top three favorite writers of all time. And she just actually put out a book called Help Thanks Wow. I think those are her three prayers. Mine change. Mine right now are come in. That's what I say when I'm stuck, when I'm about to be furious, when I'm about to lose it, when I don't know what to do. Come in is one. Thank you is another one. And a third one that I just added because one of my friends called and told me to add it was, all right. And that's the one that you say when God is nagging you so much about something and you finally cave and do it because the signs are just coming relentlessly. That one happens to me constantly. So lately that's how I started writing. I was feeling this constant nagging that I needed to get up and start writing, and I finally just said, all right. And then look, what happened?
I love it. I love it. So for everybody out there, when it's time for you to say, all right, go to the website. Go to, it is MOMASTERY.com. If you were driving and you were unable to write that down, you can go to our website. It's answers, the numeral for thefamily.com. We will have it on there. Check out the website and definitely check out the book. This has been a great read. As I said, I go to the gym. I pedal for an hour each morning, and not only have I enjoyed it, but those around me that tend to look over my shoulder, I guess, seem to be liking it as well. You can go right to it. I believe you can order it right from the website. Is that correct?
Yes, it'll just take you to Amazon. It's everywhere that books are sold now.
Okay, so it is, everywhere. And again, we've just got about 2 minutes. Glennon, thank you so much for coming on. And, what is the one thing that you would like to share, with the listeners? Again, most of them out there are parents, or there are people that are working with families. Who maybe, are having some problems, within the family. What is the one thing you would like to leave them with?
Oh, gosh. I just wrote today about my marriage, and it's been such a hard road. Marriage is harder to me than even parenting is lately. I thought it would be easier than it is. And I think that no matter what it is, when it comes to family is what we love the most, and so it's where we're the most vulnerable. And you know what? I just think that based on thousands of letters that I've read from families all over the place and from my own experience, that, the most beautiful things in life are the messiest. And I think most of our trouble comes when we try to make it not messy. It is messy, and I think we can find a whole lot of beauty and laughter in the mess. And I don't think that you're missing anything. I don't think that you're doing anything wrong. I think that marriage and family are hard just because they're supposed to be hard. And we can use that hard to, drive us towards each other instead of away from each other. And that's it. That's my whole message.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for opening up and sharing with us your life. And again, for everybody out there, thank you for listening. Be with us next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza right here on LA Talk Radio.